dog fans. Welcome back to another edition of the Dog and Duck Show. Today is going to be an all-dog episode as my co-host Mark Schmoor is on break this week. And with me is the owner of Real Dog and the Howling Husky himself, Mr. Mike Martin. Mike, how are you doing, my friend?
You know, it was rough over the weekend for Joe Jarzynka, to a guy that was larger than life to me. I was up till about 2 a.m. talking to players. Players were offering, their memories, and so, you know, it was just. It was one of those guys that you felt like would always cheat death.
Yeah.
He lived there on the edge so much to have one of your heroes as a kid. Of course, I was in my 20s at the time, but yeah. to have a guy that you looked up to, that you admired.
Yeah.
The thing that was so cool about him, and you got to interview him once, but he was just so, he knew that he had an S on his chest to a lot of people, but he didn't act like he had one. He loved telling the stories because people loved to hear them.
Yeah.
And that's what I appreciate about him so much, is that he understood his place in people's hearts and he embraced it.
Absolutely. Well, if you've been living in a cave the last few days, what we're talking about and what we'll be kind of covering for a few minutes at the start of the show is the sad passing of Husky legend Joe Jarzynka. Joe passed away this past Sunday, apparently on a fishing trip out in the Olympic Peninsula. And he is an unforgettable Husky. He walked on the team in 95 and 98. He was an All Pac-10 selection as an all-purpose player, not just for his returning abilities, but also for his kicking. But what will always remain in the minds of Husky fans near and far is that this 5'7", 175-pound little mighty mite refused to call a fair catch whenever a punt came his way. And that toughness, those instincts, that ability, that electricity that he brought every single week is something that will always be remembered and never be forgotten.
Did you read, I don't know if you read the story that I did on why he never made a fair catch after one, was that it wasn't an option at one point, because Lambright was like, you know, I'm putting you out there to return punts, not to catch the punts. And, yeah. And so he put him out there and it paid off, and it was, and he played fearlessly. But one of his favorite stories to tell is when it was one of his first practices where one of the players looks over at him. He's like, "Hey, can you get me some water?" And he's like, "I'm a football player." And they're like, "Yeah, sure you are."
Yeah. Yeah.
And, he always felt like he was not early on. He always felt like he was not too far from fetching water for the team. And so he was always ready to do whatever you could do. And so that's what he did. He, when the Huskies struggled with point afters. He stepped up, did that. I think he went 6 for 8 with a long of 44.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, he had that 91-yard punt return. So the guy was just – for someone, you know, I wasn't the biggest of punt returners, but I was elusive, and people would see me out there, and people would say, "What you can't hurt what you can't catch." Mm. So I think that's sort of what Joe lived with as well.
Absolutely. So Mike, you know, maybe just tell a little bit about some of your personal experiences with Joe and what, you know, what kind of man he was off of the field.
Well, the thing that he was doing our Husky pregame show when I was with Sports Illustrated, mm-hmm. and he was so happy, and I was so happy to have him come up, and he was living down in the Renton area, and he shows up, and I probably gave him the same look that guy that was asking him to get in water, because I was expecting a blonde mane, and there he was with, you could tell that he had just had his hair cut,
mm-hmm.
Because he had some of the tan lines, and he's like, "Well, my wife told me I should get it cut and look presentable." I'm like, "Dude, we've always, you know, thought of you." You know, his hair was so tied in with who he was,
right?
But you know, in the last few years, when he and I would talk, would be really sort of in the hours before and the hours after a Husky game, because a lot of times his kids would have games, and mm-hmm. and so I was kind of his update, his Husky mm-hmm. update, and mm-hmm. and we would text or we would chat, you know, several times throughout the season, and he never lost his passion, but his new passion was his family, and he was a true family man who loved his kids, loved his wife, loved his life. And when you think back of, you know, sort of some of his antics back when he was at UW, to see a guy settle down and, mm-hmm. you know, put the passion that he had in those returns into his family, it was inspiring for me to see a guy who lived and breathed Husky football to be able to, you know, say, "Hey, there are things that are more important, and that's my family."
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's a sad day for Husky Nation, and we'll continue to remember him. I hope that the University of Washington will do something to commemorate Joe this season, and not let his name be forgotten in future generations. But certainly a great loss, but a character and a hero of Husky football that will live for a long time in the minds of those that got to see him play. And, you know, so Mike, as we kind of turn the page now and talk a little bit about what lies ahead, we are recording this on Tuesday night. The Huskies have had their first day of spring practice. They're doing things a little bit differently this year. So maybe kind of break down the way that they're breaking up their practice schedule this spring. And what the reasoning behind that is.
You know, to be honest, I don't know what the reasoning is, but I really like what they have done. They have three practices, the 6th, 8th, and 10th of March. Then they go on spring break. They come back, and I believe it's the 2nd of April that then they go to three practices a week. I think it's going to be 2nd, 4th, and 6th, and then the following week, they'll have three practices. They're going to have a ton of visitors. So I really like that they're going to be able to spread out those visits with those kids and really get some one-on-one time with them And so I think that that's, they're going to have, by my last count, I think is about 35 visitors. So I like it from that aspect. They spread them out so that they can have plenty of time to go over film, to correct stuff before they hit the field again. Mm-hmm. And so I really like how it is formatted so that there's time to heal in the first couple of weeks, you know, and we saw in the first week, Maurice Himes went down.
Yeah.
And, you know, to have an injury like he had, not really sure exactly what it was. It was head, neck, spine injury, the way they immobilized him. So to be able to lose a guy on the first day of practice, but it sounds like he's going to be back soon enough, that extra 3 weeks is going to be valuable for some of these early injuries that you always see in the first few days, because they're working out, they're doing all that stuff, but they're never out there smacking each other around like they do in the first few weeks. So I really like this format where it gives them the opportunity to get healthy. So I think that's one of it. It gives them a lot of time to correct, but the first three practices are always sort of you're not in full pads. They had helmets with padding on it, but they didn't have any shoulder pads, no leg pads. But let me tell you, those quarterbacks were throwing the ball like I haven't seen on the first day of practice ever. All of a sudden I just saw the ball. You're thinking, oh, they're going to kind of, you know, do a little bit of dink and dunk stuff. And then all of a sudden you see somebody just, and it was clearly a Michael Penix pass. And it's just this beautiful arcing pass that Denzel Boston caught. And it was like a 75-yard touchdown. And you look back and it was Dylan Morris that threw it.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah. So that dude has really progressed nicely. He's really benefiting. And the way that the practice was run, they subbed in the quarterbacks. You really had to keep your eye on who was throwing it, because the mechanics of the delivery, you know, one's left-handed, one's right-handed, but the place that they were putting the ball for the receivers was unbelievable. Early on, the defensive backs were really able to kind of hold their own in a lot of cases. Sometimes it was pass interference, but usually the quarterbacks were putting the ball in the spot where only one guy had a shot at it. And you know, and Romo Dunze, he's in postseason form. I'd like to say midseason, but the dude is in postseason form already. He made three catches that were just absolutely ridiculous. They were overthrown by two by Penix, one by Morris, but he just got full extension. And Denzel Boston and his catch radius, there was one that he absolutely had no business catching, and he just hauled it in. And, you know, these guys, you can tell that they have been working out with each other, and it's really been, you know, for 2.5 hours or 2 hours and 15 minutes, it was, you know, it was as good as any game I've been to, just from the level of excitement and the buzz that was generated by some of those completions.
Wow. Yeah. So, I mean, clearly the first few days of practice, typically that's what you're focused on is the fundamentals, getting the basics back down. One of my favorite Chris Peterson stories is him talking about how one of his players coming up to him at the beginning of spring practice and saying, I got this, coach, I got this. And him stopping him saying, no, you don't got this. You know, the moment that you think you got this is the moment that somebody's passing you up. So you got to go back to the basics every single time. Do it right every single time. That's how you achieve success. And I know that Kalen DeBoer and his staff have that same kind of mentality. They're not loosey-goosey. Everything they do has a rhyme and a reason, a purpose and a direction. And it's clearly paying off already. And, you know, I think what we're seeing is that last year at this time, let's be honest, we were all in a wait and see mentality. Like you and I, none of us really knew whether or not Penix was going to be the guy. Now, we all had our suspicions that he would most likely end up at the top of the list, but nobody expected that he was going to have a Heisman caliber season. Nobody expected that this offense was going to put up over 41 points a game. So now we go from this wait and see mentality to what I call a can't wait to see mentality. Like Husky Nation, we're salivating thinking about this upcoming year. So Mike, what are some things as you go to practice? I'm going to be at practice on Friday. We'll keep covering this through Real Dog, but what are some things that you personally can't wait to see from this team, you know, from certain players, from guys that you're looking to really show out during spring practice?
Well, I really want to see who's going in instead of Jeremiah Martin. I want to see Javale Smalls. I think he can make a big step forward. The one thing that I was really kind of thinking, okay, week two, week three of spring practice, we'll see, you know, just what happens with Dylan Morris. But the dude is, that's no longer a concern for me of who's going to back up Penix. What happens if Penix goes down? Now, granted, it is one practice, but the way that you saw the ball coming off of his hands and being delivered in spots just like Penix, where you couldn't tell who was throwing the ball, that answered that question for me. So, you know, the next thing that I'm looking for is the edge rush, a stout defensive line, linebackers. The biggest position battle is, I think, may have been answered already. We'll probably sub things around, but where you saw that you still have Troy Fautano at left tackle, Roger Rosengarten at right tackle, but most of the other guys, the majority of the refs went to Nate Kaleppo and Julius Buelo at the guards, and they kind of swapped around a little bit. And then you had Mateo Mele doing a lot of the stuff at center, but you also saw Miles Morrell, Garen Hatchett, and somebody else whose name I'm forgetting.
Parker Brailsford.
Yeah, he did some stuff there at center as well. So I think the actual position battle on the offensive line is really going to be at center. Who's going to emerge? And that's something that I think they probably would like to get settled by week three, and just really kind of get of spring, not fall, but of spring, and really kind of get that dialed in. So, but the defensive backs, I don't expect a battle out of them until week three, because they're really kind of feeling things around.
Right.
And just kind of seeing, who looks the part. For me, Thaddeus Dixon definitely looks the part. We'll see when a couple of other guys come in, but he was the guy that physically looked the part. He was able to handle as anybody can handle Roma Dunze, Jalen McMillan. He's not afraid to stick his nose in in their business on routes. So, that defensive backfield, they have a lot of bodies and we'll see just what happens. The guy that really physically looks the part is Elijah Jackson. He looks a lot better defined than he has. We didn't get to see him play a whole lot last year, but he definitely looks the part. However, the guy that really surprised me of how much he changed physically is Jeremy Bernard. I've known him for several years, and his thighs are thicker than I can recall. So he physically has always looked the part, but he's taken that to the next level in the short amount of time that he's been there. He's going to, I think, be running with the ones quite a bit. I know they're going to be in waves, but it's going to be, I think he's going to be out there on big downs when you have Jalen McMillan, Rome Odunze, Jalen Polk. I think that Jeremy right now is in the Taj Davis area already. So that's the guy that really kind of surprised me. And I have a video that I'll be posting of him extending for a ball that was thrown wide and left of him. He spun around 270 degrees to pull it in. So he has the skill, and now he has a power five body. He always had a power five body, but we're talking upper echelon of power five bodies.
Right. Now he's got an all conference kind of body.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it's interesting, Mike, because just a few years ago, when Jimmy Lake was coaching the defensive backfield and Washington was known as the West Coast DBU, the narrative that always came out of spring practice and fall practice was, hey, the defense always has the advantage at the beginning of camp. It takes a while for the offense to catch up. And certainly, you know, Jimmy had the horses with all of those studs that he had, from Buddha to Sydney to Kevin to, you know, Molden to Keith Taylor and you know, Kyler. And I mean, it just goes on and on and on. Trent McDuffie. But now we've got all of these horses, all of these studs at the wide receiver position. We've got an All-American caliber quarterback in Michael Penix Jr. Here we are on day one. You're talking about long bombs, 75-yard passes from the second string quarterback to, you know, perhaps a third string wide receiver in Denzel Boston. And so the question that you always have to wrestle with whenever you're a reporter for the local team reporting on their practices is, how do you balance between what you're seeing on the field as being progress by one squad or a lack of progress by the other squad? So if the offense is doing well, is that because the defense is just not good enough? Or if the defense is dominating the offense, then, you know, what's the problem with Michael Penix and the wide receivers today? So how do you kind of, like, from an evaluation perspective, how do you try to draw some healthy, like, you know, narratives from practice when one squad is going up against the other?
Well, the thing about what we saw was, early on, the defensive backs did not stand a chance because of where that ball was placed. There were a lot of back shoulder throws, comebackers, that defensively they were afraid of the long ball. They were able to drive them off and come back, and the receivers and the quarterback were just in sync. Like I'm saying, we saw with Jake Browning, and I'm trying to think of some of the other quarterbacks, where the first day of spring, they had a net that they would be throwing the ball into, and they'd be trying to get to the top third, top left third, top right third, and just working on that.
Yeah.
And what I think that does is it sort of, you can never really just cut it loose. And mm-hmm. what these guys did was they cut it loose day one. And I think that really accelerated the growth from these guys, because it didn't matter about that one little third of the target that they were trying to hit. They had to throw the ball as hard as they can to the receiver and make the adjustments. It's sort of like a pitcher. You want to throw the ball as hard as you can and gradually hone in. You know, when you're trying to get them to throw a slider or something, you want them to throw the ball as hard as you can and gradually adjust the form. Well, that's what they are doing right now, rather than trying to hit these tiny little spots where you might be pulling back a little bit because you want to be more accurate and you want to, you know, deliver the ball into that tiny little window. They don't care about those windows. The receivers are in motion, and so they're able to adjust where the little tiny square could not. So that, for me, was one of the biggest differences of just cutting it loose. Yeah. And you know, I was not expecting what we saw out there. Just from a quarterback and just from day one approach. Mm-hmm. You know, that to me said a lot about the offense. Defensively, they just didn't stand a chance in so many of those instances.
Yeah.
So, you know, Elijah Jackson, when I interviewed him, he said, "We know when we're starting to get those interceptions that how good we're going to be." So, you know, he's putting a lot of the stuff on the defensive backs to, they did a lot of stuff, but we still have to make plays on balls. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how all that stuff kind of develops throughout the spring.
Love it. I love it. Well, hey, let's do this. I want to get your thoughts on some players that you really want to see take a leap forward this spring. So why don't we do this? You'll take one on offense. I'll take one on offense. You take one on defense. I'll take one on defense. And then we'll see if there's any other guys that we want to talk about. So let's start with the offense. Who is one guy that you want to see take a leap forward this spring?
Offensively, I really want to see what Dylan Johnson brings. He's not going to be here for a couple more weeks till the spring quarter actually starts. Yeah. But with him, well, what we saw with Wayne Talapapa last year was that he got there in summer. Mm-hmm. And it took the team really up until about week 7 or week 8 to really get him to understand his role. Whereas with Dylan Johnson, and we're talking week 7, week 8 of the season, that's when his productivity really was able to match that, and in some cases exceed Rome Odunze and Jalen McMillan. So to have him in spring and have him integrated into that offense this early is, I think it is going to be so important, especially when you have Boise State coming to town first game of the season. You have to have your dogs in a row.
Yeah, absolutely.
See what I did there?
I love it. I love it. Yeah. Well, I think for me, one guy that I want to see step forward this year in on the offense is tight end Quentin Moore. He was a guy that, you know, was a junior college transfer. He's got a big body. He's one of the biggest tight ends that we've got. 6'4". Last year, he played at 259 and was primarily used as a blocking tight end. But they've dropped him down to 248. He's lost 11 pounds. And I'd like to see him take a leap forward, both in the blocking, but also, you know, getting him more involved in the passing game, because I think when he came here, we expected that he was going to be that prototypical dual threat tight end. And I think that capability is there. He's just got to kind of get more accustomed to the system. And, you know, maybe this weight change will help him take a step forward. So we know what we've got in Westover and Culp. And we certainly saw Culp take a major step forward last year as well. I'd like to see that same step with Quentin Moore this year as well.
Yeah, and with Josh Cuevas coming in, Ryan Otten, he looked really good. For a guy that is 6'6", I think he's in the 240 range, he did a jab step one side, and I'm trying to think of who was blocking for him, did a jab step and set up the block so perfectly, got an extra 12 yards after the catch. When there was a guy that really, if he'd gone one way, it would have been easy to shed the blocker, but set up the block so well with that little jab step and getting around and getting those extra yards. That is a position that, I'm pretty comfortable with whoever they put out there. And I like that they're bringing in guys and saying to Quentin, you know, earn your spot.
Yeah, no doubt. But the thing is that, I mean, most likely Culp and Westover are going to be gone after this year. So we need Otten and Cuevas to really be ready to step into that role in a big way next year. And maybe Quentin Moore is a part of that bridge, but those are guys. I think that tight end room, if you look at what the tight end did as a unit last year, I think it was very impressive, but I think that we can do more in the tight end. And maybe Quentin Moore is the answer to that question.
And so, does he become, because Devin Culp, he's ridiculous when you see him get the ball in his hands in space. But can Quentin Moore become that sort of Gronk and some of the Kelce and some of those bigger tight ends, because that he has that big tight end body, and can he get rumbling downfield where he's just shucking those defensive backs? So I really agree with that, but there are a lot of bodies that they're going to have to fight through, just like at receiver, they're creating competition. So, and depth. So,
So give me your defensive player that you want to see take a step forward.
How about Reclaim? And that's Edifon. He is an All-American caliber linebacker. Mm-hmm. I interviewed him on Monday, and I asked him, who's the first one into the film room? And he said, well, if I'm going to get in there to be the first one, I have to be in there at 4 o'clock in the morning, because Coach Juice is already in there. But he said he's treating it like he's a walk-on, and he has to go out and earn his spot. He said nothing is given with this team. You have to earn every second of playing time. And so when he can do that, and he's dragging guys into the film room, and he's taken on that sixth-year senior leadership role, I think there's a lot to really he has a lot to prove, and he wants to go out there and really reprove and rebuild that legacy. And And he made reference to Michael Jackson and the 1977 season, I believe it was, where Michael Jackson was in the 200s in tackles. And and so he said that he's had conversations with Michael Jackson about, hey, come on, break my record. And so
I love it.
And so, you know, there's a lot for him to prove. So I'm really excited about him having a Michael Jackson-esque season again.
No, that's a great call. And I mean, if we can just get a Ben Burkervin season out of him, that will be a tremendous upgrade for this upcoming season. Another guy, you know, I think two guys that have All-American experience, him and ZTF. Certainly ZTF's got a lot to prove in this upcoming season, but I'm gonna take another pick. I was tempted to take Ulamu Ale as he's, you know, continuing to make that migration to the defensive tackle unit. But the guy that I want to see take a step is a guy that I love seeing him on the field, and it's Voi Tanufi. He's just a guy that seems to be a playmaker wherever the coaches put him. And I'm really curious to see what they do with him this year, because he's dropped his weight down to 249. So he's definitely very light for a defensive lineman, but that quick twitch ability, that speed that he has, I think makes him a really unique weapon that the coaches can utilize in a number of different positions. I see him as a guy that can really, you know, have, like, the guy that I compare him to is not a Husky at all. It's actually a Cougar, and that's Hercules Mataafa. And I think he's a guy that this year could be kind of that joker card that the Huskies throw out and put him in a number of different places and just say, hey, go make plays, go get tackles for loss, go get sacks. So that's a guy that I'm really looking forward to seeing take another leap this year.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I've known him for a few years, and his dad, I don't know if you saw the video of the Samoan with the Samoan flag, it was the last game of the season, and he is in his lava in the front row down there by the tunnel, and he has his flag and he's bare chested, and you know, it's just such a fun family. But yeah. I was announcing Friday Harbor at Orcas game, and this guy comes up to me and he says, hey, Mike. And I'm like, hi, how are you? And he introduces himself and he says, I'm Voyee's uncle. And I'm like, who's Voyee's? And I'm thinking about all the Friday Harbor players. And he said, my last name is Tanufi. And I'm like, oh, Voi. And he goes, no, it's pronounced Voyee. So it was pretty cool. So yeah, that guy is one of my favorite players, because he isn't just short field quick twitch, but he has the speed. I'd love to see him get a fumble recovery where he can scoop and scores like he did back when he was at East in Salt Lake City, and where he can just turn on those jets and people can really see how fast that guy is. He has the I think that he could be a very good edge defender, and I talked to him about that on Monday, and he said they're gonna try to put him in wherever he's his best, and he said, I'm comfortable adding some weight. I'm comfortable at the weight I am. Wherever this coaching staff feels that they can utilize me best is where he wants to play. So, you know, he's the consummate team player and just a great kid altogether.
It's great. I love it. Good story. So give me one more name. Let's just kind of bring it all together. Give me one more name on the offense, defense, or special teams. One more player that you want to see take a major step forward this year.
I would love to see Daniel Nagata put in that Joe Jarzynka tape and watch him return those punts and just come in and really elevate the return game, because he has some wiggle to him. I got to see him a little bit, and he I think he can be really good for the return game.
Absolutely. Well, I'll give one more guy. Certainly a guy that has been a great contributor thus far, but Mish Powell. So Mish is a guy that, you know, walked on and became a starter last year, really had some productive games. I think demonstrated a great ability to tackle, to shut down the running game, to bump and run. Struggled a little bit with some of the deep coverage. Now it sounds like they may be moving him over to that Husky position to utilize his strengths and maybe cover up a little bit of his weaknesses a little bit more. But I want to see Mish Powell really become an enforcer this year, that he just would lay the lumber on some guys like JoJo McIntosh used to do, like Byron Murphy was able to do at different times, even Buda Baker, the way that he would lay out and take guys out. I want
to see Zeke.
Oh, and Zeke Turner. Yeah, for sure. So I want to see him kind of step into that role. I think this Husky defense needs a guy to really set the tone and to say, hey, you're not going to have your way against us. We're going to make you, we're going to make life very difficult for you if you try to throw the ball against us. And I think he's the guy that could do that. So that's a guy that I want to see take a big step forward. I don't want him to take out any of our own guys during spring practice, but I want to see him flying around and really, you know, being aggressive wherever the coaches put him.
Well, and I think he's the one that got in the shot, and I forget who the receiver was, but on a probably a 15 yard cross, somebody got hit in the mouth, and the mouth guard went flying 10, 15 feet. And I think it was he who delivered the blow, but I think that he's a guy that's due for it. And I think you'll appreciate this story. Last year when Umalu'ale went down with that early injury, everyone was fearing it was a bad knee injury, and he didn't miss a whole lot of time. I talked to him and I said, you know, I saw you go down on a knee. And he says, yeah, I stopped and I prayed about that. So after practice, after Maurice Himes was down, I said, what did you do? And he said, same thing I did last time. I just got down on a knee and prayed for him. Mm-hmm. So he's a guy that I think is he has his head in the right spot. Elijah Jackson has his head in the right spot. Those are a couple of guys that I'm actually pretty excited about on that defensive unit as well.
Definitely. Definitely. Elijah Jackson is a guy that Jimmy Lake personally identified as an up and coming guy before Lake got let go. And it didn't materialize in 2021 or 2022, but maybe this is the year for him. So, Mike, as we wrap this up, give our listeners an update. What's going on with Real Dog? How can they, you know, keep up with what you're doing and follow, you know, get all the best information on Husky News?
Well, Real Dog is, you know, we've broken more stories than I think just about anybody has, as far as stuff in the NIL, as far as where Sam Heward was going. We've broken a lot of stories. We have some very good sources, and we're going to have something on future conference alignment for the Huskies, something that I'm working on right now. It's pretty solid. I'm definitely going to want to take a look at that. Have some very good sources. It's realdog.com. We cover recruiting. We cover everything Husky football. We're working on expanding our women's sports coverage. And so we just have a lot of stuff, but it's, you know, it's really sort of one of those things when you start writing, you think, you know, maybe I'd own my site one day and to have a dream come true. There it is. Sometimes you speak things into existence. So just really, really enjoying it. I love the competition out there for stories. There's so many good Husky sites. I think Husky football is covered better than a lot of teams around the country. Just Husky fans are so good, so passionate, and we have some great members that you know, it's fun to have that interaction on our private message board as well, where we hide some of the breaking stories. Everybody knows that long before we actually put the stories out. So anyway, realdog.com. I'm if you look for Mike Martin on Twitter or at Howlin, Howlin Husky, also Husky Nation on Facebook. Don't really do a whole lot on Twitter, but excuse me, on Instagram, but I've been seeing a lot of my stories are popping up over there. So I gotta crack that. But anyway, I'm really looking forward to recruiting and kicking into the high gear here shortly.
Well, I will be covering the Husky practice on Friday and reporting on that through Real Dog. So keep listening to the Dog and Duck Show. Keep listening to the 4th and Inches Network. Keep visiting realdog.com and continue to bleed purple and pea gold whenever you get the opportunity. But for all my dog fans and for Mike Martin, go Dogs.
Go Dogs.
We'll catch you next time.
All right.